Welcome to the special edition. This is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. The lies continue to hang in the airwaves concerning September 11, 2012 attack in Benghazi. And the American people are still not satisfied with the treachery perpetrated by the Obama administration, the media, and the refusal of Congress to uncover the truth about that infamous night. I have the tremendous pleasure of welcoming the following gentlemen back to join me to pull the pin on the truth of Benghazi. My friend Major General Paul Vallely, a co-founder of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi, is a veteran of two combat tours in Vietnam and a graduate of the Industrial College of the Armed Forces and the Army War College. He has over 15 years' experience in special operations, psychological, and civil military operations. And he has brought with him William Cotel, was J2 NCOIC Warning and Inductions Watch in the Global Command Control System, Central Command, Tampa, Florida. He marked all air and seas assets in the Med on September 11, 2012. Nicholas Noe is a former 603rd Air and Space Operations Center personnel member working in combat operations within the Combat Report Cell, was based out of Ramstein Air Base, Germany, and was tracking assets throughout the Med region with the CSS system. Joshua Salmon was an intelligence analyst from the Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Division at the 603rd Air and Space Operations Center at Ramstein Air Base, Germany. On the night of September 11, 2012, he was assigned to the watch desk known as the Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Cell located on the combat operations floor. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Paul, Will, Nick, and Josh. Welcome back, gentlemen. It's a great pleasure to have you back with us again.
Thank you, Audrey. Happy to be with you.
And so, Paul, I would like you to take it from here at the top. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you, Audrey, very much. I'd like to just sort of give an overview for the group this morning. And I know we have an hour to do these interviews today, which are very important because some people have asked me and others, why are we going back seven years ago in 2012 and here it is 2019? To bring up Benghazi again. Why don't we just put it to rest and let's move on? Well, let me tell you why. Charles Woods, who's father of Ty Woods, called me earlier in the year and he said, we have some new information on Benghazi. We have some individuals who are actually on duty monitoring the situation in the Middle East and in Libya. As far as tracking the assets we had there, the Air Force, the Marines, the Navy, Army, and so on, and the Special Ops Forces. So I told Charles that I would take it on to update Benghazi for the reason of getting the truth out, and that's what we call our project now, is Benghazi, the truth, finally. And so you'll listen to some gentlemen here this morning that you've already introduced, and they will tell you the world time of what was going on in their commands at the time Benghazi started, that 13 hours that were so critical in order to mount a rescue operation. Now, after Benghazi, we found out that, and I knew from doing a show on Fox after the testimony of Hillary Clinton, Leon Panetta, and General Dempsey, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. I was asked to come on that night because I had done a previous interview where I had stated that the three of them did not tell the truth during that congressional hearing. Mm-hmm. And they didn't tell the truth because they said there wasn't enough intelligence. We couldn't mount a operation to initiate a rescue operation because we didn't have the necessary assets. Right. I knew at that time from monitoring our forces that was a lie and it was not truthful. And I went on Fox that evening, and I said they lied. And I think I did it with Geraldo Rivera. And he says, "You call him the Secretary of Defense a liar and Hillary Clinton?" I said, "Either they're lying or in their positions, they did not know what assets we had to mount a rescue operation." Mm. And then subsequent to that, of course, the Trey Gowdy led the congressional hearing on Benghazi. At that time, Admiral Lyons and Joe McInerney and I and several others had formed the Citizens Commission on Benghazi to do interviews and follow up and assist Trey Gowdy and the Congress in putting together the necessary facts to hold responsible those individuals in those government positions that lied to the American people and did not attempt a rescue operation, but in fact terminated a rescue operation for the reasons that I stated. And so from that standpoint, we gave everything to Trey Gowdy. And if I may use a football metaphor, he took it to the 10-yard line, Audrey, and then quit. After all the intelligence information that we had, he stopped and never took it in across the goal line.
Right.
And so Admiral Lyons and I figured out that he was compromised. And we now know that he was compromised. And I don't want to go into that in detail on the show here. Mm-hmm. But basically called off the investigation and went nowhere. So the individuals responsible were not held accountable. And what I call dereliction of duty on their part, Defense Department, State Department, the White House, for not attempting a rescue operation. Because, as you know, and our troops must know, if they're in harm's way anywhere in the world, we will come, assist, and we will rescue them. And that goes for U.S. civilians abroad as well that are threatened. So from that standpoint, I was able to bring in the gentlemen you're going to hear this morning who were on duty that evening. And they will tell you that we had, number one, a tracking communication, worldwide communication system that tracked the assets that were available for a rescue operation, and the fact that it was started up and they were given a stand-down order to bow out, mm-hmm. back off any kind of further following the Benghazi, mm-hmm. and move on to some other things that were in their command at the time, mm-hmm. such as a command post exercise that was going on in Central Command, mm-hmm. In Tampa, Florida. So with that, Audrey, that's sort of the overview. We want those individuals held accountable for what they did in negligence of duty and causing and not even attempting to rescue those four Americans and even attempt to maybe salvage what was a bad situation with the ambassador there.
Right. Thank you for that overview, Paul. I want to begin with this. As you mentioned, it's stated on Fox News that Secretary Clinton lied when she said that assets were not in the area for a rescue. Now, what assets were available? And, you know, Will, Nick, and Josh, feel free to chime in here as well. But I want to start with you, Paul.
They will discuss that because they were on duty.
Okay.
And maybe if you want to start off with Will at Central Command, and
sure.
Then we can move over to Ramstein Air Force Base on what was being monitored there in Germany of the mm-hmm. Middle East.
Sure.
But I think take each one of our members here individually, and they can tell their story of what happened that day.
Great. Will, why don't we start with you?
All right. Well, let me just go over a brief overview of what took place that time. At CENTCOM, when I was in charge of the watch floor, we were tasked to do AFRICOM's missions, just so you remember that. AFRICOM was a new form command, did not have the assets to go ahead and push and pull intelligence information from their sector and their theater of operations, as well as to NATO. We were also involved with pushing and pulling intelligence information to NATO. During the lead up to the Benghazi incident in 9/11/2012, there were a lot of indications, both human and signals intelligence and other things that came out that were very significant threats that would signal that any kind of key personnel would be removed and security would have to be increased. Neither one of those were done. Security was decreased, and no key personnel were removed. And to further that, during the night of 9/11 at CENTCOM, we were in a training exercise called Internal Look 12, or IL-12. That exercise encompassed about 75% of CENTCOM's personnel, both in Tampa, Florida, and in Qatar, and in other locations around the world. When the Benghazi attacks kicked off, at the very same time, our embassy in Cairo, Egypt, was also overrun. We were not allowed to stop the training exercise to aid in those missions whatsoever. Only three personnel were pulled to monitor what happens in Egypt, and we were told to just continue the training exercise. And that took place for another 8.5 hours after attacks began, before we stopped the training exercise, and everybody that were key personnel, key leaders, had to go back to duty to go ahead and address those issues. So throughout that whole time period, you had a lot of good personnel and assets and other things tied up in training, and you had orders coming down throughout the training time from higher than CENTCOM stating that the State Department will handle what's going on in Egypt. They want to allow the Morsi government to regain control of our embassy. And they stated that they were going to have other issues taking place in Benghazi to aid the personnel on the ground, which never happened. We further also received communique that foreign countries that are NATO allies and others offered assistance to help our personnel on the ground, and they were denied by the State Department. And additionally to that, we know for a fact there were many troops, assets, and personnel in place to be able to respond to this attack that we're not allowed to. And we were not given explanation as to why. Then if we fast forward that recap and we go forward to 2014, I provided this information to the Tregody Benghazi Hearing Committee in detail. I told them where to get the facts, the assets, the information, and the evidence required.
Right.
Further than that, I also talked to the Democratic side because the Republican side did not respond to me.
Right.
I also communicated with multiple senators and congressmen, to include Senator Rubio and others, that none of them did respond either. And I lodged an IG complaint with the Department of Defense IG, which was also not responded to.
Right.
So I did a host of things that were not being responded to. Now, their chief investigator for the Tregody Committee did communicate with me and advise me that they didn't want that information.
They didn't want it.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. So they didn't want the information?
They did not want the evidence or the facts.
Okay.
I mean, it's bare bones minimum information that these combatant commands and higher have specific information. For example, the Geek system, which we talked about, Global Command and Control System, that depicts where all the good guys and bad guys and just neutral people are around every area in the world. It's monitored all the time.
Right.
They did not provide that information. They did not provide the 2 to 3 months worth of human intelligence and signals intelligence reports to show the lead up to the attack or during the attack. They didn't even bother using the information from what we call reflections, the post-attack analysis. So there was a variety, a litany of things that were taking place that they didn't want the information from that shows facts and evidence that clearly should have been utilized.
Right.
And then we have the dereliction of duty, as General Donnelly pointed out, which is commanders know the difference between a lawful and an unlawful order. It is an unlawful order to not respond to troops or personnel in harm's way that need help. It is unlawful to ignore that. So
This is unbelievable. Now, could Nick and Josh, can you share about the number or what assets were available that the State Department said were not?
This is Nick. My job was keeping track of all the records. I was in combat reports and combat operations in the 603rd AOC at Ramstein. And our assets were my responsibility to know where all of them were at all times, so that way we were actually 24-hour manned, so that general officers would have access to the same information at all times. So what we had were drones, armed and unarmed, with a wide open airspace over Libya, and then we had F-16s at Lake and Heath. We had F-16s at Aviano. We had F-15s Lake and Heath. We had a pararescue team that's ready to go 24 hours a day, and every day they gave me reports about their status and whether or not someone was on vacation, and we were ready at that time. Mm-hmm. And depending on where they were anchored, we also had naval fleets there as well that could have been off the coast. And the whole 603rd AOC is a weapons system, and that in and of itself is a weapon. It has everybody with specialty jobs working together from all branches, the Army, Air Force, and the Navy. And one thing in particular that has recently surfaced is through one of my sources that I used to work with, a trusted friend who was also stationed at Ramstein. This contact was provided has provided me information and that from a Marine and I got in contact with that was on a ship off the coast of the Mediterranean or off the coast of Libya in the Mediterranean at that time. And that name of the ship is the Bataan, and it held the 21st Marine Expeditionary Unit. It had it was a the USS Bataan is an LHD-5. It's a WASP, and it's an amphibious assault ship from the Navy. And it contained fast teams, force recon, and infantry. And they were also loaded those their V-22 Ospreys up, and they sat and waited for more than 4 hours while they waited to later to be told to unload.
This is mind-boggling. Did anyone, you had all this data, did anyone from Congress request this data?
I'd like to chime in on that, and I'm going to say no. I told you that they told me straight out they did not want it. They did not want the factual information. They wanted the overview information.
That's it.
When I talked to their lead investigator, who was a very respected man, he advised me straight out that they did not want those specific facts. And as a matter of fact, he even sent me a copy of what the Department of Defense gave him, which was a printout of one geek's image, and it was a blank page. Oh. So they did not cooperate, and nobody went after that evidence. And these are all, you know, these congressmen like Trey Gowdy are all former prosecutors. They know good and well that, you know, you can't talk a game without having some kind of evidence or facts to cite from.
Sure.
So it made no sense.
And Josh, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
A little bit. I was an intelligence analyst for the 603rd. Typically, we work downstairs in the Intelligence Surveillance Reconnaissance Division. We were representatives, basically manning the watch desk for the 603rd. It's basically it's a compartmentalized, basically a top secret area, almost like liaisons from downstairs that work on the combat operations floor. So one of us would monitor either Mert chat or all the information coming in of goings on around both AORs and UCOM and AFRICOM, and another would monitor all of the flights of all the jets that we had in the air around the AOR. So we had received a call from one of the entities, I forget exactly which one it was that we worked with pretty closely, asking us if we knew what was going on, and we weren't seeing anything as far as the attack. We hadn't been briefed on it, an email or anything like that. Now, you know, the schedule that we worked, I don't believe that we missed it. I believe it would have been passed on, but it caught us both off guard because it was just myself and my counterpart working that night. So when we received that call, I basically tried to get a timeline of what was going on and make some calls to other entities that we worked with, the USAFE for one, U.S. Air Forces Europe, and they called their superiors in, a couple of forward colonels and whatnot. Well, we're responsible technically when we're on the night shift and working on the combat ops floor to the chief of combat operations. So when we got all this information together and presented it to him, he basically shut us down and told us to sit on our hands, essentially. When we presented the information to him, he said, well, there's nothing we can do from here, so don't bother calling anybody in. And that wasn't well received in the morning. In the morning, we generally will do a full brief on the past 12 hours. So we continued to monitor the situation, get the timeline, give it to the Predator LNO, continued to monitor all the flights that were going on at the time. We have flights going on all day, all night, you know, through our air tasking order. Mm-hmm. That's what's tasked to fly that particular ATO day, airspace control order. Shows where they're going to be flying for that day, and we have multiple bed downs, probably more so than we would brief to the combat ops floor, because we'd brief them to the chief of ISR and his entourage every morning to show, you know, jets that were available, where they were flying, any major things that were wrong with them, anything that they picked up of you know, a significant note. And in the morning, the chief of ISR was none too happy that nobody got called in. Well, when explaining to him that essentially, you know, on the night shift and when we're working up there, we're responsible, you know, the chief of combat ops makes the call at that point. And, you know, what had happened, he wasn't necessarily upset at us, but at the situation, because he mentioned that we could have surged assets right at the time. So whether that's asset reallocation that already in the air, launching them, you know, we have manned and unmanned. So, and there, like I said, there are multiple bed downs beyond what we even showed the combat ops floor that shows other assets. Now, whether they're special operations or different subordinate units that would show what we had allocated and what could have been fueled or taken off or reallocated at the time.
Right, right. Nick, you stated that, and I quote, "Our systems had thorough details about the terrorist cell before the attack. We had been tracking them for some time. We even knew 1 week out that an attack was imminent." End of quote. That contradicts what the State Department claims. So, Nick, Josh, Will, would you expound on this for us? Because that's incredible information. You knew a week out that an attack was imminent. So they knew
this.
They knew this, and now they were denying it. Is that correct?
That information was given to me by somebody that was one of our coworkers, who Josh also knows. And essentially told me exactly what you just said. And you know, since then, you know, that it only corroborates everything else that when I was put after he had told me that, then I had met with Will, and who also corroborated that information. This person worked in the counterintelligence part of AFRICOM on LEND for a short time before the switchover happened, where the unit we had absorbed AFRICOM into it. So that's how that came about.
Can I expound on that a little
bit?
Sure,
of course.
That most of those reports that he says he has from tracking different terrorist cells and other things, they came from my watch floor. Because, like I said, we were tasked to provide all the intelligence information in the forms of human and signals intelligence and other intelligence assets down to both AFRICOM on a higher classified level so they can get more information, and also to NATO, which is a little bit lesser classification. It's more of a secret. But all the forces were aware of things from 5 months out to the day of the attacks, and they progressively got more intense. And like I said before, some of the sources that they were using were actually vetted sources, which is, again, the scale of F1 through F6, F6 being somebody that walks in off the street, wants a phone card or something, all the way to F1 where they've been polygraphed. Some of these sources were like F3s and F4s. They were pretty vetted, and they continued to go forward. And again, the signals intelligence that came in started to corroborate a lot of what they were saying the closer we got to 9/11 2012.
Right, right. And this further confirms what you're saying. Isn't it true that Ambassador Stevens requested numerous times an increased security presence there?
Yes, he did, and he was denied. I'm not familiar with what the denial process was or why it happened. Maybe General Valley has a better indicator than I do, but I know for a fact they had requested it for 2 months all the way to the day of.
And of course,
Go ahead. When you're ready, let me intervene a few thoughts here.
Sure.
Some background information, some simultaneous things that were going on, activities before and after. We finally found out that what they were covering up in Libya was an arms deal. Mm. And you can interview Mark Turry, who is the guy that was working that arms deal for the State Department. Those arms eventually went into Turkey and then into Syria. And so they're trying to cover up the arms deal, and Ambassador Stevens was heavily involved in that, and probably was the reason he went down to the consulate there. But certainly we had all the intel before and during, and that's critical. Now, background going on, from the White House, it was directed that Hillary Clinton and the State Department would take over this Benghazi situation. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, the Defense Department is in charge of directing forces into risk areas for rescue operations or for other missions. It's not a State Department. So you had an arms deal gone bad. You had the State Department taking over an operation which should have been conducted by the Defense Department. But from the White House down, the Defense Department was told to stand down. And then that filtered down to the Central Command, where Will was, as well as over to Ramstein, Josh and Nick. And so all that's going on in the background. Of course, these guys work in the operations center. They had no idea what was going on in Washington through the chain of command and so on. And that's why a lot of this has to do, this reinvestigation that we're doing, was the cover-up, was the fact that there was a lack of enforcement going down through the Defense Department to the various commands to mount that operation, which could have been launched in that second hour of the 13 hours. 1 hour is the buildup of the intelligence, looking at options, but certainly at the end of the second hour, they could have launched drones and launched rescue operations, sent in some F-16s, bombed the outer circle there of the annex and the consulate. Nothing would ever be guaranteed that you're going to have a successful rescue operation, but you can always try. And with the forces we had, we could have probably, with a high rate of assurance, rescued those four individuals during those 13 hours. Now, the other point I'll make is only President Trump can take this on. Congress won't do anything about it.
Right.
Defense Department won't do anything about it unless they're ordered by the president to do it. So it's, we're doing this to get it to President Trump. So with everything else that's going on, with the Russian collusion thing over, now with the situation in Ukraine, you can see how it all ties together in a collusion by the radical Dems that came directly from the White House to the State Department. So that's the picture that we wanted to paint to you today. And hopefully... this will get some attention in the White House.
Right. You know, isn't there a record of those security requests by Ambassador Stevens? I mean, or did Bleachbit get that?
No, there's a record. It's in the State Department. It's still in their archives. They have to, by law, just like the Department of Defense, maintain records, hard copy for at least 2 years, and then they put in what's called a data ball, the archive data. So that's like a digital ball that holds a lot of archived data for future issues.
Yeah. So, and we see, of course, as you mentioned, the Trey Gowdy dropped the ball. Why didn't he run the ball into the end zone? What happened there? Why didn't anyone else? There was no other interest in Congress in this?
They were compromised. Okay?
It's unbelievable.
They were compromised. They were compromised, as we know, from the Clinton machine.
Yeah.
And Trey Gowdy, two things happen in Washington for when you get compromised. Either it's having affairs or it's money. It's usually one of those two things.
Yeah.
And I know what happened, but I'm not going to divulge it on the show today, that Trey Gowdy was compromised. And Admiral Lyons and I knew that because of his inaction to take from the 10-yard line into the end zone.
Yeah.
We knew at that time when he stopped, something was happening behind the scenes.
Audrey?
Yes.
Audrey?
Yes.
I'd like to interject one thing because General Vallely brought it up, if you don't mind.
Sure.
He made a comment about the Ukraine situation today.
Yes.
And I wanted to make this clear and present. This is not our subject topic, but they're accusing the current administration and President Trump of not giving aid to the Ukrainian armed forces.
Right.
In 2015, President Obama purposely shut down a program to provide specifically Javelin anti-tank missiles to the Ukraine, and he put policies in place to not allow any company to sell them any kind of defensive armament.
Mm.
He provided first aid stuff, and he provided some outdated night vision goggles, but nothing that they were, you know, requesting back then to stop the Russian advancement. And they're attempting to use that against this current president by saying he's the one that stopped the aid, and that is simply a lie. That is a straight fact lie, and that needs to be addressed at some point. And so this whole thing about Benghazi, of us trying to get these individuals that were involved with it, the senior ones, get them held accountable and basically charged and put away in jail, is what we're trying to do to get rid of some of these obstructionists in government that are still hindering the president's current day missions and get closure for the Benghazi incident itself.
Yes. Yeah, excellent. Thank you for that information. Representative Gowdy, who's I'm not a fan of, the American people want to know, why did he drop this? Has anyone bothered to try to keep him accountable? Any of his constituents that you know of or anyone else in Congress?
No one.
No one. Absolutely.
I know it wasn't Suzanne Brooks because I went to her and she turned me away.
Now the
she worked for Gowdy, right?
Yeah, I think
she's
so, right?
On the committee. Yeah,
she's on the committee. Yeah.
After Trump was elected, I felt safe enough to come out with the information, and so I went directly to her because she's nearby where I live.
Right.
And I was met with aggression. So, and then after I expressed my concerns over what had happened, they referred me to the Benghazi report. And then also after that, I sounded concerned. And then she said, well, why don't you call the FBI? So I called the chief of staff's bluff.
Unbelievable.
The FBI.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Yeah. But that's how corrupt how corrupt it was during that Obama administration, right, with everything that was going on. Total corruption from the top.
Yeah. Nick, you said you called the FBI.
Yeah, I waited a couple of weeks to try and figure out exactly what had just happened. I couldn't understand why somebody on the Benghazi committee would tell me the investigation's over and they're not interested in that anymore, and they're on the committee. So why would you not want the truth and the right information that you don't have? And why would you turn someone away and tell them to go to the FBI, who later I talked to, it was two or three weeks later, I called, gave my phone number information and everything that they would need, and they could look me up with the Office of Personnel Management if they needed to verify who I was. And they never called me back. They never paid me a visit. And I asked them, I said, can I arrange a meeting? And they said, no, you have to come in and just walk in. And at that time, that's whenever Comey was trying to instigate a coup against a sitting president, and he had just been fired. I wasn't going in there.
No, I know. I know, you'd have to lawyer up to do that. So, unbelievable. Look, we touched on this before, but for the new listeners, General Hamm changed his story on three different occasions concerning that night. Never in any of those the versions did he tell the truth. What was the significance of that?
I believe General Hamm was trying to cover up the fact that he was derelict in duty by not executing orders. He may have been told not to do it, is what we were instructed, that General Hamm was basically had his hands tied. But the problem remained that General Hamm still had an obligation to do that, and they threatened to relieve him, and I understand that. But after all of this took place, he still refuses to come out. Right now, he's the head of AUSA. You can look him up on Google. You can try to call him. He'll never respond to you.
Really?
To speak about this. But this is a travesty of justice and a travesty of military justice as well. Two types of justices, and General Valerie can speak more articulately than I can on it. But the fact remains that he's still duty-bound to speak out about the wrongdoings and give explanation as to why he had to lie.
Yeah.
I mean, he should be held to a standard for that.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Paul.
No, I was just saying, absolutely, that's a good point, William, you did have a chain of command down through there, generals as well as admirals going from the highest level of the Defense Department to two major commands out there in Ramstein in Germany, and at Central Command in Tampa. So you have a four-star that was in charge of CENTCOM at that time. And so down the line to the colonels then that they discussed that were in charge of, say, the operations center or whatever. But you had field grade officers, colonels, lieutenant colonels, majors, captains, lieutenants. And you had the NCOs that were down, really running those operations of following assets and keeping track of them so that they could feed them back up to the chain of, through the chain of command. And then all ultimately goes to the JCS, okay?
Right.
General Dempsey was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at that time, a fellow West Pointer. And if he didn't know that we had assets over there, which he did know, by the way, you have to because you're briefed on it continually of the assets, whether it's in Pacific Command, Central Command, Middle East, South America, whatever, they're keeping track of that continually 24 hours a day. And so that's why they all backed down when the White House order came out through the State Department that the State Department would take over the situation. And then that's when the stand down order came, and it went down through the chain of command. And as was said, if I was in charge and I was a general admiral out there, I would not have listened to that chain of command at that time, because I knew they were in error, that there was something going on. My focus would have been to save those Americans. And if I had to give up my rank to do it, I'd have done it. But that's what warriors do. They fall on the sword for their troops.
Yeah.
And that did not happen.
Yeah, and that doesn't speak very well of Dempsey, does it?
No.
Can I say how many people I've spoken to on this and who they are?
Yes.
Besides the Trey Gowdy Committee, I also spoke to the Democratic Committee and Elijah Cummings people, which didn't respond. I spoke to Congresswoman Castro down here in Tampa. She didn't respond. I spoke to Senator Marco Rubio. He didn't respond. I also spoke to Congressman Peter King. He didn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to a host of other senators and congressmen throughout a year time period, especially a Ron Johnson out of Wisconsin, a Republican, none of which responded to anything I stated. I spoke to the Department of Defense IG. I spoke to the FBI and Department of Justice. They didn't respond either. I spoke to the Department of State as well. They didn't respond to me either. I went through a litany of commands. I even tried to go back through the previous administration, the Obama White House, and complain about this, and they didn't respond at all. So I went through a lot of different folks and spoke to a lot of different people about this that were in key positions to say or do something, and not one of them, not one, did anything. And that to me is an absolute scary moment in our history, because we just have no way of finding out what mission we can go on and where we're going to get back or not back. Are we going to be scapegoated or what? It's absolutely ridiculous. And this is something that needs to be brought out, that all these congressmen and senators, they have a duty, a responsibility, and a job, and they're not performing that. Not just with Benghazi, but with so many other events today.
Yeah.
They need to be held to a standard.
Right.
That's very true, Will. And I remember going on national television when I was with Fox News as a senior military analyst there, and engaging a number of the programs on Fox at that time. I didn't let it die. And Admiral Lyons and Joe McInerney and others at the Citizens Commission for Benghazi, which now has been transformed into the Citizens Commission on National Security, that we monitor these things. And we have a lot of talented people as part of our group, headed by the executive director, Roger Aronoff, who was with Accuracy and Media before that. So we had a very talented and skilled organization of military, members of the CIA, military legal expertise in that within our Citizens Commission. So we were very taken back by the fact that Trey Gowdy was compromised and backed off, as well as what Will has pointed out, a number of other senators and congressmen, and so that's been the state of affairs now for my goodness, going on several decades now, and it's all part of that deep swamp cover-up that occurs in a number of different areas. And again, I want to thank Charles Woods for calling me and asking me to resurrect this again and linking me with these outstanding individuals who are on the show with us today of what the truth was and what actually happened. We want some justification here. We want someone held responsible to the families that lost their loved ones, and that's what it's about.
I have a question about one congressman in particular, because I believe he assumed office in 2003, and this is Steve King in Iowa. And of all the Congress people, I think that you would have heard something from him. Did anyone contact him about this to make a stink about it?
What's the congressman's name, man?
Steve King in Iowa.
No, I did not.
So, and
well, you remember, Audrey, I think it was him that called President Obama a liar during LK. So what happened with Stephen King, even the Republicans
Yeah, they kind of excommunicated
him. Silenced him, so he was compromised. Then, so I'm sure he didn't want to go further on anything because he was already tapped down by the Democrats and Republicans for standing up to the president for lying.
Yeah, he was removed from some committees, and
recently he was called. That's how it works. They don't want to lose their power, you know.
Yeah, sure.
They get compromised.
They're careerists, is what it is. They're not serving the people; they're serving themselves. But I find with all these representatives, this is highly disgusting. That nobody still is there. Anybody at this point in Congress that any of you know of that's interested in the facts?
No,
I don't know of any. I know that Congressman Joy came out pretty harsh and beating up on the Democratic committees for some of the stuff they've come out with in the last couple of days. He may or may not have interest in this. I'll try to reach out to him and see if he'll listen. Audrey, there's one thing I did want to bring out. Let's see. Josh.
Yes.
Josh, listen, Audrey, I want to speak one piece about Josh and let him speak to his own. Josh has been struggling with this whole event for all these years. He's got a lot of guilt, and he's done a lot to try to alleviate that guilt by explaining himself and bringing out the facts. And the sad fact is that a lot of us have done it. He just wasn't aware of it. Now that he's with a group that's done it, it's good that he has the opportunity to speak out, because Josh is still a veteran. Josh still matters to a lot of people. Yes. So we want to make sure he has his opportunity to say how, you know, he's done stuff, if that's all right with you.
Oh, absolutely. Right ahead.
These young men, Audrey, are braver than the chain of command generals and admirals and State Department officials that we had on duty during that time.
Oh, I know that. There's no doubt about that. Go right ahead, Josh.
Okay, Will, do you mean with the whole, like, drinking thing? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm just talking about your guilt in general and how you've tried to cope with that and who you've talked to. I want you to let the people that are listening to us listen to your story, because it's heart-wrenching, and it hurts me that you have to go through that, because we have such a bunch of coward liars that roll around here.
Yeah,
I mean, it's more so, I mean, you know, you could have done something at the time, and you just get shut down, you have to watch it happen, or, you know, get the, you know, information as it comes in, kind of tuck it away for a while, because, you know, every day there's going to be another mission. They don't stop coming, so you got to kind of just deal with it in your own way. You know, and there is a certain level of guilt that comes along with that. You carry it around for enough time just to know you could have done something, but, you know, you got shut down. It's frustrating after a while. You know, so after a while, you know, after a long time, you know, maybe I didn't, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people do handle it in the best way. So, you know, I turned to the bottle for a little bit for a while. And, you know, it's nice now to have the folks that I can talk to about it on this show and otherwise, to be able to, you know, get the information out there and talk about it. Cause, you know, for the most part, they're a lot of the ones that really just understand it. And it's just nice to get the information out there and alleviate that, you know, along with some counseling, cause just burying that stuff inside for the longest time, you know, it's not good. And, you know, it just starts to fester. And once it starts to boil over, you know, it's not the healthiest thing in the world. So this has been, you know, a very therapeutic experience, you know, and, you know, in a moral standpoint, it's the right thing to do. And I think it helps a lot of people. It helps me to get that out there and to be able to talk to these gentlemen about it and, you know, try and get the information out there and do something positive with it instead of having it buried for, you know, forever and just letting it eat at you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that it is disgusting that those that were above you and that were in power that were so cowardly and self-serving to do what they did, and they were the ones that did this to you, that caused this kind of frustration to the point where it would be harmful to you. I'm grateful for you sharing your information and your story, and I want you all to continue to do that through this show. Until we get someone to pay attention. Has anyone made any more attempts to contact the White House and get this? See, if the president knows this, something will get done. But there's a lot of, I'm sorry, but deep staters protecting him from a lot of this information. Has anyone had any success getting through?
Yes, we've said it. But like I say, Audrey, to a lot of people, when you're in the box, The White House, you're in a box if you're working there. If you're working at the Defense Department, you're in a box. And people that are outside the box, even if a retired officer like myself, they may get it and receive it just as an operation I'm working on now about Iran that we gave to the White House several weeks ago. But they never respond back. And this has been true of all of the administrations. When I send stuff in on Syria, it never got any feedback, never comes back. And it doesn't mean they're not doing something with it. But they don't want to get involved with somebody on the outside of the box. And this is very important to understand. That's why we can't depend on Congress to do anything. Only the president can do everything. That's why, or anything. That's why we've gone to the media in articles, television, radio, that hopefully someone will get this information to President Trump. And that's why the program today, this hour that we're doing, we've got to get this interview today into the White House, into Trump, because I think once he sees it, he'll do something about it with all the other things, of course, he's juggling. But a lot of things are still buried by the bureaucracy, the staff, and the deep state.
That's it.
We can't defend on the Defense Department or State Department. Only the president can do anything about this.
Yeah. I think I love and respect this president, and that if I could say that there's only one thing, that, and it's because he's, I guess, a newbie in many ways because he's not a politician. He needed to do, and he still needs to do, a clean sweep, because I don't care what side of the aisle these people are on, and most of them are Democrat, but we have deep state, faux Republicans, posers in there too, that are in the government and need to be, it needs to be swept clean, whatever he can do to get them out, and they're around him all the time. Unfortunately, that's the only way I think that something, this information, is going to get through. Paul, actually, to all of you, let me begin with Paul. How can the listeners follow and support your work and your efforts in this? How can they get follow?
Well, the best thing is to contact me through email or WhatsApp app. My email is standupamericausa1@gmail.com, so they can certainly contact me, and I can then connect with the gentleman that we have on with us today, and we'll be happy then to be able to discuss the situation that we've discussed with you today. But we're not going to give up on this, Audrey. We all agree.
Absolutely.
We're going to push forward until something is done. We're not going to give up like Congress has given up on this.
Not at all. I'm very grateful for that, and I'm happy to put myself at your disposal anytime you want to continue. We have to continue to do this. So even if we go over information, because there's more and more people that are learning about it, this is the only way it's going to happen, and I'm very grateful to all of you gentlemen. And as always, I'm going to put that information, anything else I have, on the live show page. This will air this evening. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and that will take you to the show description and any other information that's under it that you need to have to follow this critical information so that we can expose it and bring it to the president's attention. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for your amazing courage in sharing the truth yet again, and we're going to continue to do so. Will you again join me on the show? Yes?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Awesome. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.